There is no doubt that September 19th, 2022 will forever be marked by one of the most momentous events in recent history and current memory. Reigning for over 70 years, Queen Elizabeth II had been a constant and consistent presence in this rapidly changing world for both young and old. She not only stood as a pillar of Britain's cultural heritage, but for many, her dignity, grace, and duty to the country was inspirational, especially for women. As such, her loss has been deeply felt by millions across the world. Testament to this can be found in the 2,000 mourners that lined the streets around Westminster Abbey to pay tribute to our monarch. Nevertheless, whilst at home, 27 million people across Britain tuned in to the live broadcast to see the event, which will likely become one of the most watched in history. Audience viewership globally was said to have reached 4.1 billion. One of the most spectacular aspects of this solemn event was that, for the first time in history, many people were able to witness an event that was previously private to the public audience and only understood through contemporary sources. Thus, to the watchful historian, the funeral of Queen Elizabeth II contained a plethora of traditions and allegories which can be found in the funerals of monarchs dating back as far as the medieval era. The royal funeral ceremony is marked by two predominant developments: symbolism of tradition and an articulation of the superhuman quality of monarchy. What will become clear from the analysis of King Edward III is that there are incredibly strong connections to Elizabeth's funeral, not only in the ceremony itself, but also in the way it was received by audiences. The choice to analyse Edward III arises from two main aspects. The first is that Edward's funeral was arguably the first to establish explicit rituals of monarchical continuity, and the other is that a large number of English sources survive which describe the funeral ceremony. Titled Litlington Missal and the Liber Regialis, the funeral ceremony, as in today's world, arose from two of Westminster manuscripts dating from 1383 and 1390. Nevertheless, before understanding the funeral, it is worthwhile to discuss the events of Edward's death and the relationship between the monarchy and family. Edward III passed away at about 7 p.m. on the 21st of June, 1377, at a manor in Sheen, Richmond in Surrey. Two contemporaries provide descriptions of the scene at his deathbed. In portraying him as a warrior king, Jean Froissart portrayed him as being surrounded by his three surviving sons, John of Gaunt, Edmund of Cambridge, Thomas of Woodstock, as well as his son-in-law, John, the Duke of Brittany, Edmund, the Earl of March, and Isabella, his daughter. This 14th century scene is very similar to that which was reported by the BBC about the death of Queen Elizabeth, and the reception of this news was equally as comparable. Froissart writes that the Kingdom of England was utterly grief-stricken, for he had no equal since the time of King Arthur. The emphasis of loyalty and family cohesion was a potent element of Edward's image of kingship, and one which Elizabeth also cultivated over her reign. Nevertheless, immediately after the death of the Queen, the government implemented a process whereby world leaders, the Commonwealth and the BBC, were informed. Whilst this may seem like a modern strategy, the first action following Edward's death was somewhat similar. The government immediately sent messengers to the ports of the south and east coasts of England to inform in various members of the aristocracy and papacy about the death of the king, and also ensure that the affairs of the country were in order before an official announcement. Whilst there is no surviving narrative of the funeral itself, there is, however, as noted, evidence from two royal funeral udines. This manuscript showed that the royal household, alongside the Chapel Royal, were responsible for organising the funeral, a role which is still upheld today. Equally, the personal servants of the king were to be maintained for a while after the king's death, rather than being immediately dispersed, and I understand that a similar approach has been upheld within Buckingham Palace for the servants of the queen. like Charles, Richard immediately assumed authority over the kingdom following Edward's death, and it was doubtless that his council made major decisions concerning the funeral. For almost 2 weeks after his death, the body of Edward lay in the chapel at Sheen, which was draped in black cloth in the same way that Elizabeth lay at Westminster before her funeral. The Friday before the Queen's funeral, the Archbishop of Canterbury celebrated a Requiem Mass at St. Paul's Cathedral, which began the train of public solemnities. This also happened in the 14th century before the funeral of Edward. His body then was washed and treated with oils and spices to preserve the body. Whilst no evidence currently exists for this ritual being undertaken for the Queen, given that it is a ritual undertaken by each monarch since William the Conqueror, it most probably has occurred. Nevertheless, whilst this had a function to preserve the body, it equally was a ritual to purify the body and soul of the departed. The Ordo then specifies the regalia which was to accompany the body of the monarch. The crown or diadem was to be placed on the head, and the hands were to be covered with golden gloves decorated with diamonds and a gold ring placed on the middle finger. A circular golden orb was to then be placed in the right hand and a scepter in the left. This ritual was since developed from the 14th century and is closer to a 17th century ritual whereby the royal regalia was placed on top of the coffin rather than on the body and then removed before burial to mark the end of the monarch's reign. Then, accompanied by prelates and magnates of his realm to the place which he shall have chosen for his burial, the coffin is then transported after a ceremony to the burial site. After the service, the royal household, along with members of the kingdom, military services, and the Commonwealth, transported the Queen through London to her resting place at Windsor. Froissart writes that Edward's body was also carried through the city, but unlike the Queen, his face was uncovered. Records show that 550 members of the king's household and administration followed the coffin along 400 torchbearers and many others. In fact, the procession was almost equal in number to Elizabeth's. Equally, in the same way that the children of the queen closely followed the coffin, Froissart writes that the king's body was reverently and respectfully laid on a bier and carried through the city by 24 knights in black, with three sons and the Duke of Brittany and the Earl of March following behind. Following the funeral, the household, along with magnates and other nobles, dined at a customary banquet similar to the congregation of world leaders which met at the household at Westminster. As such, whilst there are developments over centuries, the essence of the funeral ceremony has remained largely the same. Despite personal politics and beliefs about the institution of monarchy, this aspect is incredible and a testament to the cultural heritage of Britain. Understanding that we are witnessing a series of events that were similarly undertaken 7 centuries ago is a spectacular tribute to the symbolic nature of the monarchy.